Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
As we've seen in the past weeks and months, the state is proceeding very slowly with stops, starts, and controversy in issuing casino gambling licenses. While that process grinds on, Massachusetts has also begun quietly looking at possibly legalizing online poker. 18 members of the Massachusetts House sponsored an amendment to this year's state budget that, if passed, would authorize 3 online poker licenses in the state.
The Massachusetts Gaming Commission has also called for hearings about online gambling, and the State Lottery Commission recently called for the legislature to allow the Lottery Commission to experiment with online services.
Given the trouble brick-and-mortar casinos have been having here, many people believe online gambling is still a long shot in Massachusetts. But clearly, the interest is there. And it's fascinating because online gambling dwells in an ethical and moral gray area. We allow scratch and lottery tickets, and people will eventually be able to play at poker tables in Massachusetts someday. So why not online? And yet, in 2006, Congress passed the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, which promptly shut down some of the nation's most lucrative online gambling sites. Author Ben Mesrick writes about one of those doomed businesses in his book, Straight Flush, the true story of 6 college friends who dealt their way to a $1 billion online poker empire and how it all came crashing down. The book comes out in paperback tomorrow, and Ben Mesrick joins us in the studio now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hey, thanks very much.
Great to have you. So that's the context of the conversation. why we're delighted to have you here today, because there are sort of the beginning of the first ripples of maybe online poker coming to Massachusetts. But I'd like to look back at what you write in your book as sort of a cautionary tale.
Right.
Tell us the story. This takes place, it begins in Montana.
Right. It was a group of frat brothers from the University of Montana, and these were kind of cowboy-type kids, really from tough backgrounds. None of them were all that wealthy. And then essentially they were part of the launch of online poker the first time. They created a company called Absolute Poker. They moved most of their frat to Costa Rica, where they operated it in this kind of Wild West scenario where there's girls and guns and bags full of money. And they built it to $1 million a day business.
$1 million a day.
Right. It was this gray area, though. Nobody could tell them whether it was legal or not, because at the time there wasn't really any clear law. Then in 2006, the U.S. government, essentially 2 conservative senators passed a bill by attaching it to a port terrorism bill. So it kind of snuck through, and it suddenly made the movement of money involved in online poker illegal. And so essentially the whole industry crashed. In 2011, they were raided. So there were 5 years in between where they kept operating. And essentially they were operating when it was actually illegal. Then in 2011, they were raided, and the main character ended up a fugitive, and his brother went to jail.
In federal prison, in fact.
In a federal prison for close to a year. And the other guy's still a fugitive, facing an 80-year indictment.
Well, in the book, what interests me is that you write that, first of all, okay, $1 million a day is an attraction enough to try to launch a business in this space, but that these college students at the time, none of them even knew the first thing about coding.
No, they didn't know, and they needed to hire a geek, as they called it. They actually went to Korea because they heard Koreans were the best programmers. They weren't Mark Zuckerberg. These were guys who were essentially playing poker in an underground bar in Montana, and they loved playing poker and said, let's put it on the internet. And at the time, the internet was very fledgling. I mean, this was around 2000. Nobody really knew what they were doing. It was mostly porn, really, on the internet at the time. And they essentially built it from nothing. And there were lots of, stops and starts. And there were other companies building even bigger than them. There was Party Poker, there was Poker Stars, and then Absolute Poker.
Well, you mentioned pornography. I mean, that was one of the things that was fueling one of these other online poker businesses.
Right, right. Party Poker was built originally on 1-900 lines, and that's how they made their original money. And then they poured that money into online poker, and then they became an $18 billion company.
So you talked about how there was this sort of question of, is it legal or not,
right,
before 2000. 2006? And why was that even a question? Why wasn't the presumption that it is legal because it's an online business?
Well, first of all,
so
it's also a
I mean,
game.
It's gambling.
It's not
but...
even really gambling in a way. Poker is a game of skill. I mean, I liken it more to pool or bowling. You know, it could almost be considered a sport. The better player usually wins in poker. So it's not like the lottery, which is clearly gambling, or you know, betting on blackjack, which is clearly, for the most part, gambling. But poker is a game of skill. It was not clear because there was an internet assumption that things like this were illegal going all the way back to the Wire Act, which was way earlier aimed at the mob, essentially, in the 60s. And the Wire Act essentially worked to make sports betting illegal. And online poker and online casinos were kind of lumped into that. But it was never clear that what they were doing was illegal in until 2006.
So you hit the nail on the head in terms of why there... This still lives in this ethical gray area, because you say poker is a game of skill, but other people say, yes, but the minute you start putting down money and bets, it does turn into gambling, especially if you're not the person holding the hand of cards, right? And you're
right.
Betting on another player. I mean,
well, you bet. I mean, when you play online poker, you have a hand and the other person has a hand.
Yeah.
The only question is, you don't, if it's not regulated, and it wasn't regulated because this was, you know, run out of Costa Rica and Antigua or wherever, then you have no idea what's really going on behind the numbers you see on the screen. Someone could be looking at your cards. There were lots of cheating scandals. There were things like that. But once it's regulated, which assumedly that's what will happen if it becomes legal in Massachusetts, then it's essentially like playing poker with your friends. I mean, you're playing poker. The cards that come out are coming out of a deck, and you're making bets based on what you have and how you play. And the better player will usually win.
So where does the law that the federal government passed in 2006, the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, stand now, given the fact that, 11 states are looking at possibly issuing online poker licenses?
Right. 3 states have already enacted it. New Jersey, Nevada, and Delaware all have legal online poker now. 11 states are considering it. You know, the act from 2006 has been called in question a lot. Even the Department of Justice's own lawyers made a determination that poker shouldn't be included as online gambling because it's a game of skill. You know, it's very hypocritical. We live in a society where you can go to Shaw's supermarket and buy a scratch ticket. Nobody cares, right? You can go online and bet your entire retirement account on Ameritrade or Fidelity.com on a stock you've never even heard of, right? And that's okay. We all bet on sports. March Madness is a national pastime, and everyone bets on it, and nobody cares. And so there's no reason that online poker should be illegal. I mean, that's my opinion. Whether or not, you know, it should be allowed under the age of 18, obviously, I don't think so. I think there should be regulations involved. But I think it's coming, and I don't think it's ever going to – it's not going to go away. I think it's going to come pretty soon.
Right. Well, I mean, since you did offer your opinion, let me just offer the counter opinion from many people we've spoken to on the show about it. One of the biggest concerns is that, you know, it's one thing to have a casino or three, however many casinos we'll end up having in Massachusetts, but people have to actually drive there. They have to physically get themselves there.
Right.
But, you know, online gaming, it's in your pocket. It's on your laptop. I mean, the concern is that problem gambling could
right.
be that much more exacerbated when people don't even have to bother to drive to, I don't know, Foxwoods right now.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're an adult, problem gambling is something that should be countered through forms of regulation, age limits. There could be a way for sites to see how much you're losing. There could be limits to how much money you put on the site. But the casual gambler, or the majority of people, aren't going to be problem gamblers. They're going to be people who do it for fun. So, yes, I agree. You know, there is an issue. There are a small percentage of people who do have an addictive personality who are going to get in trouble with this. I think college kids is where it gets kind of, to me, gray area, because college kids love poker. They love gambling. And if this were available to college kids easily, I think a lot of college kids would do it. And that's where you kind of might run into some dangers. But at the same time, you know, we live in a society where we're okay with so many other things, such as the stock market, such as investing, you know, investing with the quotations around it, that people don't really know what they're doing. And that seems fine. I don't see why poker should be the thing taken out of that.
So where does all of this current, I mean, given this, the slow shift that we're seeing state by state, where does this leave the six frat
the
brothers in your book? I mean, as you said, one of them did serve time in federal prison.
Right.
The other is basically living in purgatory, albeit in, what, in Antigua.
It's not bad purgatory. Purgatory with a sunburn, right? You know, he's stuck on Antigua. He's facing an indictment that could put him in jail for 80 years. He's trying to make a deal with the government, but they want some enormous amount of money. I mean, it really was a cash grab. Poker Stars was one of the companies that got shut down. They paid a $790 million fine, and now they're up and running. So all they really want from this guy is a large check, which he claims he can't afford. But I think it's a weird situation in that he will be facing jail time for something that will be no longer illegal. If he can come up with money, he can work his way out of it. But I don't really know. I don't know what's going to happen.
So is Poker Stars, is it one of how many sites that are up and running?
Well, Poker Stars is now, they're looking at bricks and mortar, a real casino. They're, right now, you can play for play money in the United States and in Europe and elsewhere, you can play for real money. I mean, we're really one of the only countries in the world that doesn't allow online poker. It's like us and Iran and North Korea. Pretty much all of Europe, it's legal. It's legal all over the islands, all over South America. It's only here that it's not legal. Yeah, so I don't know what will happen. I mean, Absolute Poker will never happen again. I mean, that site, and if you read my book, there was a lot of corruption. There was cheating. There was a lot of dirt at that company. So that will never come back. But I do think there will be a bunch of big companies that will slowly expand and be billion-dollar companies again.
So for the states, that the 11 states that are considering issuing these licenses,
right.
I mean, when I hear you say that in its heyday, Absolute Poker, before it was shut down, was earning $1 million a day, what kind of potential money are we talking about?
Well, the industry was between $30 and $40 billion, and that was
for online poker,
right? And that was when it was a gray area. That was before it was even legitimate in a way, and it was that big an industry. So it's an enormous amount of money we're talking. If it became legal state by state, there would be a ton of tax revenue. There would be a ton of sort of money pouring into this brand new industry. You know, in the end, it will probably be the Vegas casinos that will get into it in a big way and control it because they already have built up their name recognition and all that kind of stuff. But eventually, yeah, I can't see it not happening. I mean, the way things are going, it's unlikely to me that suddenly we'll all become, you know, moralistic and decide that this isn't okay. I think eventually it'll happen.
Well, Ben Mezrich's book is Straight Flush, the true story of six college friends who dealt their way to a $1 billion online poker empire and how it all came crashing down. The book is available in paperback tomorrow. And of course, Ben is also author of The Accidental Billionaires. It's about a company you may have heard of, Facebook. Yes, and it was also the inspiration for the movie The Social Network. Ben, great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you very much.
Stay with us. Coming up, a 15-year-old ninth grader at Boston Latin School is awarded a big grant for research that could help with early breast cancer detection. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.